football is back. It will be obviously, for some reasons, completely different. But you can still make it really, really special. We will be in the stadium. You will be at home. I can promise you, we will feel your support. Stay safe. We are still with you. And you'll never walk alone.
That was Liverpool FC manager Jurgen Klopp in a message released yesterday that will bring a tear not just to the eyes of his supporters, but dare I say anyone who cares about the most popular sports league in the world. That's right, folks. After a three-month hiatus, the English Premier League is back. Today, Roger Bennett from Men in Blazers fills us in on these frantic few remaining weeks. So grab a pint and join us for a suboptimal tour of English football. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Wednesday, June 17th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Hey, Roger.
Oh, hello, Mina Kimes.
Are you relieved you're on ESPN Daily and not my NFL pod talking about your beloved Bears quarterback, Mitch Trubisky?
You know, God love Mitch Trubisky. It is an incredible pressure to be knowing that your whole life is just destined to pan out to become the answer to a trivia question in about 10 years. Who was taken ahead of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes?
Roger Bennett is a long-suffering Bears fan. He's also the co-host of Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network and the Men in Blazers podcast.
But I am just braced for him to end up with the Green Bay Packers, leading them on a fourth quarter drive to beat my beloved Chicago Bears. And I can't wait for that moment. They'll probably deserve it.
Unfortunately, we're not talking about Bears football. Today, the wait is over. The English Premier League, the most popular sports league in the world, is back after a 100-day hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. Roger, I'm sure you've been getting your fix from Bundesliga, but I have to imagine the return of English soccer is hitting a little different for you.
Oh, 100 days. It feels like 100 years, to be candid, that I've been staring at squirrels running up trees in the park and feeling the adrenaline burst of a run through midfield, watching raindrops charge down my window and feeling just an incredible wing play, interplay that I've missed from the Premier League. But yes, it's back today with its global ratings. I mean, in Britain, for much of Europe, for much of the rest of the world outside of the United States, it's kind of a seismic as the NFL and the NBA rolled into one with the pantheon of heroes and villains. It's moments of glorious ecstasy, searing despair fused with dodgy haircuts, surplus neck tattoos. But, you know, 100 days off, we're now going to have 92 games scattered almost daily over the next couple of weeks. It's coming back because we love it, because we miss it. It's coming back for hard-nosed commercial reasons. Ultimately, it's an economic decision. It's going to come back in ghost game situation where it's fanless. It's going to be different. The lack of an audience will have an impact on the football we watch. But most importantly, it is going to be good enough. It's going to be great enough to connect us to a roiling global conversation. And that's ultimately what I think we all miss about sports.
Is that what we're calling them? Ghost games? I hadn't heard that.
God love the Germans. They have a name for everything. Mm. And they call them Geistspieler. And that is what they will be.
Sam Darnold knows a thing or two about those. Back to the English Premier League. So we hit pause with most of the season done, with the exception of Liverpool. There's still a lot to be decided with the top half of the table. Seven teams vying for five spots to determine who will qualify for Champions League and Europa League, which, for those who don't know, are the mid-season European tournaments to be held next year. Roger, Liverpool have clinched a Champions League spot. Manchester City has, of course, been banned from Champions League for breaking financial fair play rules. So that spot remains open, despite City being second in the league right now. Arsenal, Wolves, Chelsea, Man U, Leicester, Tottenham, Sheffield, all in the mix. What are you expecting to see from the top of the table?
Well, the race for Champions League qualification, which is a bit like football's March Madness. It's the big tournament in which the best teams in the world, your Real Madrid, your Barcelona's, your Paris Saint-Germain's, your Bayern Munich's compete. All the big English teams want to be in that for brand reasons, for competitive reasons, for commercial reasons. And it is absolutely and completely wide open. At the bottom of the table, also, English football has something called relegation, which is, if you watch Game of Thrones, it's a bit like the Moondork. Teams get flung through that. It's as if in baseball, the worst teams every year, like the Orioles and the Marlins, were just flung out of the major leagues, demoted. And in their place, we had the Tulsa Drillers and Round Rock Express. And that is, it's a searing, it is a haunting, it is a savage part of the global football tradition. And you have six teams at the bottom who are fighting to avoid what can be economically devastating. Their revenue roughly halves when they're flung out of the Premier League. It is savage for the fan base. You know, one minute you are watching your team take to the glamorous fields of Manchester United and Arsenal. The next, you're kind of slumbering it around Brentford, Luton and Barnsley. Barring a miracle, the joyous young Norwich Canaries will disappear. But there's five teams, Aston Villa, Bournemouth, Watford and West Ham amongst them, two of which will go with them. But the big storyline, Mina, is Liverpool Football Club, American-owned Liverpool Football Club, owned by the Boston Red Sox owners, FSG. And they're yearning, they're dreaming of a return to greatness that was once title town by rote when I was a kid growing up in Liverpool. They are just 6 points away from landing the title that they have dreamed of. And that is the greatest storyline of the season.
On that note, this Sunday, the team that you root for, I'm sorry, I'm getting a producer's note, the side you support, Everton, will be squaring off against Liverpool. They are 25 points clear off the other teams in the league, and there's a possibility they can clinch the title at Goodison Park against your beloved Everton on Sunday. Paint us a picture of that rivalry.
Oh, so I grew up in Liverpool. Many of you know that city because of the Beatles, but it is like football is everything in that city. A little bit like high school basketball in Indiana or Texas high school football. There's two teams in my city. There's Liverpool, who when I grew up in the 80s and 90s won titles almost with expectation. And then there's Everton. So there's Yankees, Everton are the Mets. There's Alabama, Everton are the Auburn. God, War Eagle. And they have met so many times throughout my life. And it's always a day where your hopes rise before kickoff. And inevitably, from an Everton perspective, you end 90 minutes later just devastated with the distant cousin of hopes. That's shattered hope. An example of a derby game, Everton versus Liverpool, 2018, it was 0-0. The seconds were ticking away. And then in the 96th minute, there was a double doink. A double doink. Yes, Chicago Bears fans, it was one that you emotively will understand just how shattering it could be. The ball bounced off the crossbar and then off the shoulder of a third string striker, Divock Origi, into the net.
It's awkward and he bounces off the crossbar and into the net. Would you believe it?
Liverpool somehow managed to pull out victory, even against every percentage possibility. That will probably happen at this game. The game is even more heightened because for the first time in 30 years, Liverpool have a chance of winning the league on the turf of their arch rival, rubbing it in our faces. I have John Oliver came on our show this week. He's a massive Liverpool fan who is delighted over the years in just mocking me, deriding me. And he predicted that in the 96th minute of this game, it will remain 0-0. The ball will bounce off the crossbar. Divock Origi will be right there. It will bounce off his left testicle, as John said, his weaker testicle.
There is absolutely no way I would rather win the league than a late goal that goes in off Origi's left testicle.
He's been training hard.
He's been not training even his hard. Right testicle. That's his dominant testicle. His left testicle.
And that is how Liverpool will clinch the title. Of that, as they say on Game of Thrones, it is known.
I'm going to double down on making you feel the pain here. As you mentioned, Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp, they've been sensational all season. What's impressed you the most about them?
Jurgen Klopp is a remarkable human being. He's a Liverpool manager. Daryl Morey was on our show a couple of weeks ago and called him the single greatest man motivator in professional sports right now. He's like a Teutonic Care Bear. He's a giant human being. Think Jim Harbaugh. Back in the day when Jim Harbaugh was Jim Harbaugh, he's like a German Jim Harbaugh. He just is an effervescent conductor between Liverpool's delirious fans and their players, and he just brings the emotion of the game together.
It's not important what you've done in the past. It's not even important what you can do in the future. It's only important what you can do in this specific moment. Run for your life, fight for your life, play football the best way you can, and help each other, whatever you need.
He's a tactical specialist. He adores buccaneering football. His teams attack in German Gegenpressing, which means just to absolutely fling yourself relentlessly, breathlessly against your opponents. He has made this team just a non-stop, frenzied, attacking, sheer force of will collective, the most selfless team I've ever seen. I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth. I meant to despise Liverpool. I meant to despise Jurgen Klopp. The last time I interviewed him, I said to him, is winning the most important thing? And he did not have to wait a beat. And you never get this answer from a professional coach in English sport. He said, absolutely, it's not. He said, what ultimately matters is how you live your life. And what's probably most impressive is he's lived his values. He's not changed at all in transforming this team into the greatest football club in the world right now. And it's, even though I'm a horrific human being, I'm meant to despise everything that Liverpool do, even I can't help but admire them.
This is going to be really exciting. It's also going to be really intense because most of these teams have to play about 9 games in 40 days. What is it going to take for these teams to play quality soccer over this condensed stretch of time?
The football is going to be different. The home field advantage is gone. The adrenaline of crowd-induced mania transferring itself to the players' heads has absolutely gone. You know, we've had Larry Nance Jr. come on our show. He's an avid Premier League football fan. He's been watching the Bundesliga, and he realized when the NBA does come back, there's going to be fewer points scored per game in the NBA. In the same way, Brendan McCarthy, another avid football fan, predicted if Major League Baseball comes back, then the fastball will lose 2 to 3 miles an hour just off that interaction between the needle of the crowd. In the same way you see in the football, there's an adrenaline-fueled part of the player's decision-making that is gone. There's also, I should say, less play acting. You know, when they have thousands of fans screaming every move, everything is overdone, every reaction to the referee, every reaction to a miss. They're playing in an absolutely empty stadium and they just kind of get on with the game. The game is quicker. The ball's in play more. There's less of the kind of telenovela aspect to the sport. But I will say, when I watched the Bundesliga for the first time, the first attack where a team combined with just lascivious interplay to break down the other team's defensive backline with incredible cunning, with incredible guile, with avant-garde flicks, kicks, tricks for a sublime finish. It set my heart beating triple fast. The team play, the joy, the wonder, the sound of the ball hitting the net. So much of what attracts us to top flight football, top flight sports was there. And I will say, whatever it is, it's going to be good enough.
I am hoping for some lascivious interplay, which I don't think children should be watching that. But after the break, let's talk about how the EPL is approaching the health and safety side of things, which we have not mentioned until now.
Courage.
So, Roger, the Premier League has, as you have mentioned, the German model to look to as they've set up a plan to return. What sort of precautions on and off the field, I'm sorry, producer again, the pitch, have been put in place to allow soccer to return to England?
I should say in answering this, something that's completely obvious to you, I mean, sports ultimately is just a mirror to the society that surrounds it. And German football was able to come back first because Germany's approach to the pandemic was so strategic. From the very beginning, their testing, their contact tracing, the level of fatality was so low. And so the Bundesliga was able to come back with incredibly detailed health protocols in terms of how they handled the quarantine before the games and the testing for their players. The Premier League is more of a leap into the unknown. I mean, remember, Britain is the country that gave the world Brexit, and their response to pandemic, I'm not a medical expert, but I'd file it under slightly chaotic. And so a lot of what the Premier League is doing is trying to learn from the Bundesliga. It's the same in Spanish football. It's the same in Italian football, which is also coming back. They've released their final match day health protocols, and they're pretty fascinating to read. Sterilized balls, sterilized corner flags, no ball boys, no ball girls. The bad news, handshaking is going to be banned before the game. The really bad news, spitting and the clearing of nostrils on the field, also prohibited. So if you only tune in for the snot rockets, and I know a lot of your listeners probably do, you're going to be disappointed. The celebrations are also going to be a little more muted. So there are going to be health protocols. There's a lot of testing. Every single player gets tested twice a week. Every raft of results comes out of that testing, where it's zero positive tests or one positive test. And there's a huge, huge sigh of relief with every wave of tests that comes out. That is the medical context that will allow football to come back. And whether it will maintain at this level for the whole rest of the season remains to be seen.
Roger, on Monday, we spoke with our Brian Windhorst about some of the concerns that NBA players have about returning, including health and safety, but also distracting from activism happening in the U.S. right now, really around the world, by the way, because, as you know, the killing of George Floyd and the ensuing protests have been an international story. For their opening fixtures, Premier League teams are expected to have the words Black Lives Matter embroidered across their jerseys rather than player names. It's speculated that some players might take a knee on the field. Now, this is a sport that has been marred by racist incidents, racist chants, signs, can be seen at soccer matches at all levels around the world. With that history in mind, what does it mean to you to see the league and its players take this type of action?
It's incredibly moving, Mina. I grew up watching football in the 1980s, where there were hardly any black players at all. And football was just a bastion of everything that is wrong with humanity. It was just a place, that tribal place, where it was totally socially acceptable to vent every iota of anger that built up during the working week. And secondly, Britain has had so many racist incidents in the modern period, and football has, to a large degree, remained oblivious. It's a commercial monster, the Premier League, and they've worked incredibly hard in ways that many of your listeners will recognise from the NFL to almost create a bubble in which political realities do not enter. And so for the opening weekend of play, to see players replace the names on the back of the jerseys with Black Lives Matter, each of them will, instead of their names, have Black Lives Matter. You know, the Bundesliga has led the way in this. Anyone who's watched the Bundesliga the past 2 weeks, it's a remarkable moment to watch these footballers, almost none of whom are actually from America, kneel in the center circle. The coaches all take a knee in the coaching box. The referees, even now, the match officials take a knee with them. And it is remarkable to see these human beings who come from Africa, from Asia, from across Europe, from South America, almost none of whom have a connection to the United States from a citizenship perspective, have all been so deeply moved by the protests set off by George Floyd's murder. It's remarkable for me to watch personally and professionally, to have lived through countless moments of racial, social, cultural, political discord in Britain and almost have none of it impact football. To see it now, it's a remarkable moment, but it has to be more than just lip service. You know, it's one thing taking a knee, but Premier League football, global football, in many ways. At the coaching level, in the Premier League, there's not a single black coach. The board level is similar. The administrative level is incredibly white. And there's a player, Raheem Sterling, 25-year-old star for Manchester City in England, born in Kingston, Jamaica. And he's been incredibly vocal in this moment. He said 40% of the Premier League is black. How are there no black coaches? How do great black players never get hailed as the second they retire to be management material? Instead, he's talked about the stereotypes which hamper black players in England, that we're lazy, that we're lacking in courage, that we don't have leadership material. And he said the soul searching that English Premier League, that British football, that European football in large has to do, if that doesn't occur, then it will all be for naught.
It certainly sounds like there are a lot of parallels with American football. Everything you're describing, you could use a lot of that same language to describe football here. Is there a tradition of athlete activism in soccer?
Since the days of David Beckham, English football fused pop culture with athletic wonder, and there's always been perceived to be more about lads on the lash. You know, the Ronaldo smashes a Lamborghini into the side of a bridge and just gets out, walks away, goes to the Lamborghini dealership, buys himself another one. Isn't he amazing? That's more the common parlance. And there is a remarkable moment in this pandemic and this moment in England of the Black Lives Matter movement, where a number of the players have gone out into the streets and joined the protests, led the protests. There's a player, Marcus Rashford, young England striker, Manchester United star, who has used this moment to start to campaign against childhood hunger. And again, 2-3 years ago, football players did not get involved in social issues. They were most certainly not going anywhere near the political issues of the day. But Marcus Rashford has used this time, the past 3 months, to, on a daily basis, campaign against child hunger, raise millions to feed low-income individuals at risk. He's done it beautifully. He's been an incredible hero. And there is a chance coming out of this darkness that there is a small light, is that we're seeing a rise, a new prototype of what a elite professional footballer in Britain, in the Premier League, could look like. And I think more and more and more that's going to be the Premier League's future.
Before we wrap, I do want to talk about the most important player in the world, my favorite player, Tottenham's Son Heung-min, who recently completed 3 weeks of mandatory military service with the Marine Corps in South Korea, scoring 10 out of 10 on the shooting range, finishing at the top of all 157 trainees in his class. He was one of 5 to receive a prize for top performance at his graduation ceremony. I mean, what can't he do? Roger, is Son the greatest football player on earth, or just the greatest Korean football player on earth?
Why just stop at footballer?
Human.
He may be one. Oh, that's really the debate we're having. Is he the greatest human in the world? And we could have a serious 30-minute podcast just on that topic. He's a remarkable human being. He is a fantastic attacking player who plays the game with just a joyous swagger. But yeah, he used his time to complete his military service, as all South Korean men must do by the age of 28. He went to Marine Corps boot camp in the southern island of Jeju. And it was amazing watching him, you know, with all the photographs. Here's Sonny in a gas mask. Here's Sonny winning an award. He deserves every success. Tottenham are another story, a complicated story. The manager that made them left this season and was replaced by a Darth Vader-ish character, Jose Mourinho. Just an incredible heel turn for an incredibly joyous football club. And whether they will sneak into the Final Four, we'll find out. A great indicator will be one of the glamour games of this weekend. They play Manchester United, another team that are chasing glory, and that will be one to watch over the weekend to come.
I never thought I'd hear a Jeju Island mention on ESPN Daily, where my family used to vacation. So NBC Sports will be airing Premier League matches on 35 of the next 40 days, starting today. Roger, let's wrap it up. To the American audience who has not watched much of the Premier League, what are they in for?
You're in for a glimpse at the future of sports in the medium term. Ghost games, fanless spectacle. And I think it's going to be fascinating for this first weekend to watch the Premier League, the Globes' favourite sporting endeavour, adjust to this new challenging reality of pandemic sports. They're going to have EA Sports piping in crowd noise. It's going to be like an Atlanta Falcons home game with the fake sounds. In Spanish football, they've tried to have fake crowds, special effects dropped into the stadia. It looks a bit like Sharknado. I'd say that one is a work in progress. Football kicking back in again is a step back to normality, even though it's not going to be normal at all, and it never will be again. Footballers themselves, they cannot wait. They're sick of juggling toilet rolls in their own homes, doing keepy uppy videos. They're sick of doing TikToks where they do coordinated dances up the stairs to nowhere in their home. These footballers, speaking to them, they cannot wait for this moment. More than anything, to watch Liverpool Football Club, who have fallen so far off the pace of global football over the past 30 years and have American owners come in from Boston. When they win that first title, and they will win the first title, and they deserve to win the first title, the team have been otherworldly. That would be a remarkable, to me, a remarkable American sporting achievement, Mina, which will be like the Boston Red Sox winning in 2004, but with the whole world watching.
Well, thank you so much, and good luck to you this weekend.
Oh, my nipples are tingling. Honestly, can't wait. Godspeed, courage.
Oh, what a vision to go out on. Coming up, how the return of hockey is affecting players' rosters at their own homes. Here's another story I want you to know. Earlier this week, I talked to Brian Windhorst about the various obstacles standing in the way of a possible NBA restart and the various concerns being espoused by players. One of which included family planning, because as Brian informed us, NBA players often target the offseason as a time to have a baby. Learn something new every day. Anyways, it turns out that the NBA isn't the only league with this practice. Our own Greg Wyshynski wrote a piece about NHL players and their partners having similar issues with scheduling surrounding their league's return. For example, Vancouver Canucks defenseman Jordy Benn and his fiancée Jessica's due date is July 24th, a date they previously thought was conflict-free, except the NHL's restart states that training camps might open on July 10th, with the 24-team postseason tournament beginning at the end of the month. Ben is committed to being present for the birth of his child, but now he faces a challenge of potentially crossing international borders to do so. He and his fiancée live in Dallas during the offseason, but once he gets back to Canada, he'll have to quarantine for 14 days. Since the NHL's return to play plan will have players based in two hub cities, they won't be able to see their families and friends outside of those hubs to limit potential risks of exposing themselves to coronavirus. Which means soon-to-be hockey dads could be separated from the newest members of their families for an extended time. It's just one of the many lesser-known challenges surrounding the push to bring sports back. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.